God hates loose ends. And what I mean by loose ends is there are things maybe that have occurred in our lives that rather than dealing with them, we more or less say, oh well, and move on. But there are a lot of things in the Torah as far as dealing with loose ends, and there are even more things that Yeshua said about dealing with loose ends. I mean, Yeshua said that if your brother has a case against you, leave your gift at the altar and go deal with it. That's a loose end. That's something that has happened that's just hanging out there. That is a source of maybe bitterness or anger. It's a source of something that you have that sense of unrest, that something just isn't quite right and that needs to be fixed. Loose ends. Well, Joseph had a pile of loose ends with his family. In the last chapter we looked at Genesis, in chapter 41, we had Joseph finally got out of jail into Pharaoh's house, and you could see that he even said to his wife and family that you have made me forget my father's house. And he being of such authority in Egypt and going around Egypt, he could very easily, as we had said last week, just sent a group, a contingent into Canaan and said, here, grab me these guys, bring me these guys. Or he himself could go and visit his father. But he never did. Loose end. Great, big, whopping loose end. So now in Genesis chapter 42, the scene shifts back to Canaan. We have been following the story of Joseph for quite a while, several chapters. So you might ask, well, what's going on back in Canaan? It had been now, if I can get the math right this time, been about at least 20 years since Joseph had left home, because there was 13 years between the time he left and the time he stood before Pharaoh. And then they had the 7 years of plenty. And now at this point, we're into the years of famine. So it's been at least 20, probably a little bit more than that. So in Genesis chapter 42, verse 1, now Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt. And Jacob said to his sons, why are you staring at one another? In other words, don't just sit there. Do something. Hey, it's like these guys are just sitting around. They're not doing nothing. There's grain in Egypt. Verse 2. He said, behold, I've heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us from that place so that we may live and not die. It's like, get off your tuchuses. Get down to Egypt and get us some grain. It's interesting that the brothers are all gathered together. I imagine the famine might have had something to do with that, or who knows, because the last time we had seen Judah, he was far removed from the rest of the family. He had gone off by himself somewhere. But now they're all gathered back together, and apparently they're living in one camp or one community. Maybe they figured out that was the best way of getting through the famine. So verse 3, then 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain from Egypt. Okay, the math is important there. There were 12 brothers, one of them was Egypt, and 10 of them went down. What happened to the last one? We'll get to that in a minute. By the way, I looked up how much grain it takes to keep someone alive for a month. And the general figure that I found was 25 pounds of grain can keep somebody alive for a month. So we had all these people. You figure you had 10 brothers plus wives and children plus their father. I think it said later on there were 70-some people that went down to Egypt when they were fetched. So you multiply that by 25, and you get a fairly large number. I say that, and I cannot do that in my head and try to talk at the same time. But luckily, with modern technology, I didn't calculate this out. That's quite a lot of grain for a month. For 70 people, 25 pounds per person, that's almost a ton of grain a month. So that's like 1,875 pounds of grain. So I imagine you don't just have these 10 brothers just kind of wandering, walking over there. They, as you can see later on, that they were feeding their animals. They most likely had a caravan of animals. So they came to buy quite a bit of grain. It wasn't just buying one or two sacks of grain. They had to buy quite a few sacks. You know, if you figure each sack was 50 pounds, then you were maybe, each person was taking maybe four sacks, I think. Four sacks of 50 pounds, about 200 pounds of grain per person to bring back. So it was a fairly big load that they were taking back. They weren't just taking little bags back with them. They were heavily loading their animals in order to keep the family fed for a month. Verse 4, but Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, I am afraid that harm may befall him. Benjamin was Joseph's, because you might say to yourself, well, wait a minute, all of them are Joseph's brothers. This was the only full brother of Joseph. This was the only other child of Rachel, Jacob's favorite. So he didn't want to lose Benjamin as well as Joseph. Verse 5, so the sons of Israel came to buy grain among those who were coming, for the famine was in the land of Canaan also. Now Joseph was the ruler over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people the land, and Joseph's brothers came and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. I can imagine he's not the guy that, you know, every single individual in Egypt had to come see. But I can imagine we had this contingent of 10 people coming from Canaan with their caravan wanting to buy almost a ton of grain. I can imagine they had to go see Joseph for that one. That wasn't something that this under-supervisor guy standing with the little sack, filling these little sacks of grain, next, sack of grain, next, sack of grain, next, and these guys come, you know, carrying these huge sacks with them, and saying, whoa, you guys need to see the boss. And so they sent them to see Joseph. And, of course, this is the authority in all of Egypt. And so the brothers go see Joseph, and they bowed down to him, but they didn't know who he was. Verse 7, when Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. And he said to them, where have you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. But Joseph had recognized his brothers, although they did not recognize him. Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them, and said to them, you are spies, you have come to look at the undefended parts of our land. This is a fulfillment of his dream. He dreamt that they would all come and bow before him. But also the dreams reminded him, I'm sure, what happened right after he had the dreams. Right after he had the dreams, the brothers said, hi, you stinking dreamer, get out of our faces, and sold him into Egypt and all the rest. And so now he's got to figure out, who are these people? And should he trust them? Are they the same bloodthirsty thugs that had sold him into Egypt? Or is there something different? So he's going to see what they're made of. Now you can tell that Joseph did not mean the malice immediately, because he didn't have to accuse them of being spies. All he had to do is, you know, step you to the soldiers standing around him and said, these guys are spies, go put them in prison or worse. So Joseph didn't have this bitter spirit towards his brothers, but he didn't find out what's going on here. What has happened to these guys in the last 20-some years? By the way, this issue about spies coming to spy out the land, Egypt throughout its history did have issues with the Canaanites raiding Egypt, and especially this portion of Egypt. And now Egypt was the only place that had grain. that was a bona fide danger for Joseph to accuse them of. It's not like, you know, if one of us went down to the courthouse to get a permit to add on to our house and they say, you're a spy. I mean, that wouldn't be rational. But this was rational. This was something that I'm sure the brothers might have been concerned about, because Egypt and the Canaanites were not on the best of terms, that there were raiding parties from the Canaanites. There's even some indication that the Egyptians even built a canal between them and the Canaanites in order to keep them out. Verse 10, they said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies." I'm sure Joseph tried not to chuckle on the honest men comment. Verse 12, "Yet he said to them, 'No, but you have come to look at the undefended parts of our land.' But they said, 'Your servants are 12 brothers in all, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no longer alive.'" So they fully believed that Joseph was dead in Egypt, that he was put... There were places that slaves could be sold in Egypt where that would have been true. We made mention when Joseph was sold, he could have been sent to the mines. If he had been sent to the mines, chances are pretty good he'd be dead by now. Verse 14, Joseph said to them, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you will be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you that he may get your brother, while you remain confined, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you. But if not, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." So he put them all together in prison for 3 days. That's going to be an attitude adjustment if nothing else was. Just slapped in jail for 3 days. Now Joseph said to them on the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison, but as for the rest of you, go carry grain for the famine of your households." See, this was what was being presented, is that, well, okay. Remember the quantity of grain. One person could not take that much grain back home, which meant that the household would starve. Because it wasn't just an overnight trip back to Egypt. You're talking a trip of maybe a week or so to get back. And to go back to Egypt, get the brother, and come back, now you're talking 2 weeks without food. That's a lot of time. So therefore, Joseph said, "All right, well, I fear God, so I'm going to change it around. Rather than all 9 stay and 1 go, 1 stays and the rest of them go." Verse 20, "And bring your youngest brother to me, so that your words may be verified, and you will not die." And they did so. The other thing that Joseph, I'm sure, wanted to verify was whether Benjamin was even still alive. After all, they tried to do Joseph in. Benjamin was the next that was going to be his father's favorite. How did he know that the brothers hadn't done away with Benjamin? Verse 21, "Then they said to one another, 'Truly we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore this distress has come upon us.'" They're not talking about Benjamin here. They're talking about Joseph. They're saying 20 some years later, they are still bothered by what they did. And they're looking back and they're saying that this was because of Joseph. All this has happened to us because of Joseph. I mean, isn't this a terrible thing for them to have bottled up all those years? And it's not like it wouldn't have been possible for them to go hunting for Joseph. And they never made the slightest, really, effort to go find out what had happened to Joseph in Egypt. They never come looking for him. They never come seeking to buy him back. And it would have been difficult, but had they truly trusted God, I'm sure they could have found him. And now here it is coming back, one big honking loose end in that family that they never dealt with. They have positively never dealt with. The brothers had lied to the father, and they'd sent Joseph into slavery, and they themselves just had never been reconciled with it. That's the thing about sin in our lives. You know, we could do something and we could say, "Well, that's over and done with. Let's move on." And sometimes that's all you can do. Right? Because, you know, you might have offended somebody who's now dead. You might have cheated an employer who's now out of business. You might have stolen money from someone who's moved away and you can't find them. So sometimes you can't really deal with loose ends. Most of the time you can. Most of the time you can. The Torah is filled with things about giving restitution and working out. And God's principles is, okay, yes, you ask God for forgiveness. You have to do that step, but you also have to really resolve as best you can, try to undo what you have done. And these brothers never did anything of the sort. This secret just kind of was simmering in their family for 20 plus years. And it was eating them up. And they were still, as soon as something bad happened to them, they thought, oh, it's because of Joseph. It's like they were just waiting for God to do the vengeance on them because of what they'd done to their brother, rather than trying to deal with it. Too many people walking around with secrets. They got things that's going on in their lives that just deal with it. Deal with it with God and deal with it with the people that you have offended. Try the best you can to undo it and move on. But you can't move on unless you undo it. These brothers couldn't move on from it. And God has this habit of bringing loose ends back to our attention. Joseph thought that he had moved on, but he really hadn't. Because God brought these loose ends and dropped them all tangled up on his doorstep by the coming of the brothers. And he had to deal with it. That just walking away isn't enough. You have to deal with it. And none of these people had dealt with it. Joseph hadn't dealt with it, and the brothers hadn't dealt with it. Verse 22, Reuben answered them, saying, Did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Now comes the reckoning for his blood. They did not know, however, that Joseph understood, for there was an interpreter between them. Joseph was speaking Egyptian to the interpreter, who was then speaking Hebrew to the brothers, and vice versa. So the brothers didn't know that Joseph understood Hebrew very well, considering he was raised. So as a result, he was catching on to all this. Verse 24, he turned away from them and wept. But when he returned to them and spoke to them, he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Simeon, I believe, was the next oldest. Why didn't he take Reuben? Well, Reuben just said that he tried to preserve Joseph's life. So Joseph went for the next guy in line. Verse 25, then Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to restore every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. And thus it was done for them. So they loaded their donkeys with their grain and departed from there. As one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money, and behold, it was in the mouth of his sack. How many of us would say, praise God for giving our money back? What a great blessing. But that would be wrong. That would be wrong. Verse 28. He said to his brothers, my money has been returned, and behold, it is even in my sack. And their hearts sank, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, what is this that God has done to us? You ever do that? Where you go someplace, and you buy something, and they give you the wrong change, and you're back in the car, and you start riding along, and you put the change down for tolls or something, and you look down and you say, that's too much change. Most of the time, the reaction ought to be, oh, what a pain, as you turn around to go back and give the people their change back. Instead, most people say, oh, God has blessed me, etc., etc. But that is not God's, that's not the reaction of an honest man, and certainly wasn't the reaction of these people. It's like, oh, now what do we do? Now we got our money back, and we don't deserve it. Verse 29, when they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man, the Lord of the land, spoke harshly with us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, we are honest men, we are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no longer alive, and the youngest is with our father today in the land of Canaan. The man, the lord of the land, said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me, and take grain from the famine of your households, and go. But bring your youngest brother to me, that I may know that you are not spies, but honest men. I will give your brother to you, and you may trade in your land. Now it came about as they were emptying their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. When they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed. They're honest men, they were dismayed. We got our money back. We got to do something here. Bear in mind, this also speaks to the size of their sacks. Because the first brother, who was it that opened his sack? It doesn't really say. It doesn't say. It just says one of them. It doesn't say who opened his sack. But the sacks are big enough that the money could get lost in it. It's sort of like the prize at the bottom of the Cracker Jack box, if anybody's old enough to remember Cracker Jacks, that you didn't really find the prize until you dumped out the box. Until, you know, you got smart and you're a kid and you opened the bottom of the box and got it out that way. But the prize was down, or the money was down the bottom of the sack, and so they didn't see it. So they dumped it out. I guess they were dumping it out of the sacks into whatever storage things they had there to put it in, either jars or whatever. And everybody had their money back. Verse 36, their father Jacob said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and you would take Benjamin. All these things are against me. Jacob has, I think at this point, we can declare certainly that he has lost it. Right, that Jacob has lost any sort of really positive outlook or trust in God, and he has just turned into really a grouch. Anything that happens, it's like, oh, another terrible thing and another terrible day in a terrible life. Boy, that should not be anybody's attitude. God was working a wonderful thing behind the scenes. And here Jacob was there so bitter about Joseph. And now he's just assuming that he's never going to see Simeon alive again. And he's assuming that Benjamin is going to be lost. Then Reuben spoke to his father, verse 37, saying, you may put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you. Like the father's going to kill his two grandkids, sure. But Jacob said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the journey you are taking, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow. So it's sort of interesting that Joseph has gone through all this with these people. A couple of things. One of the things is, it's the dilemma, not only of loose ends, but it's the dilemma of someone who has done something terrible to you and then comes to you and asks for forgiveness, or maybe even asks for reconciliation, be it a spouse or a child or a relative who has really, as we would say, worked you over in the past and now wants the opportunity to be reconciled. What do you do? What do you say? The answer is kind of like what Joseph said. Okay, fine. You have said that you have done that. You are honest men, and you've said that you've got that you're different. Let's see you prove it. Let's see you do these following things. And you work with that with families in which one spouse has abused the other in the past. Now the spouse wants reconciliation. Do you allow reconciliation? Just because the spouse comes back, the abusing spouse comes back and says, I'm sorry? No. No. You have to rebuild trust, and you rebuild trust over time until there's a point where that person has shown that they're indeed different. As they say, talk is cheap. Right? Anybody can come back and say, oh, you know, I've returned, I've reformed. I have in times past gotten letters or phone calls from people who are in jail who wish to be part of our fellowship. And so I correspond with them for a while and I find out what in the world is going on, whether they are truly sorry for what they did, whether they are willing to, you know, to come under the authority of me, you know, or whatever elders we eventually have in the congregation, and whether they're willing to listen to counsel. And since none of them have shown up here, I think you can see the answer. The answer is no. Most of them, as soon as I have started even saying the slightest thing or examining their crimes a little bit, have gotten very defensive and very, how should I say, almost abusive at times. It's like, no, no. Even the New Covenant says, test the spirits. It always says also about teachers that you test all these sorts of things, that you don't accept things at face value, no matter what kind of a story people tell. Like, what are your actions going to be? And so Joseph doesn't even ask them any questions. He sets about to find out how honest they are. He plants this money back in their grain. He says, okay guys, what are you going to do with this? You're going to take the money and run? You're going to bring it back? How honest are you? You're going to come back with the money? Or are you going to leave it? How much do you guys care for each other? You're going to take the money and run, leaving poor, who was it, Simeon, here in jail? And just take care of yourself? Joseph might be thinking, you know, you send me into captivity and didn't blink an eye just because you were upset. Are you going to leave Simeon in captivity just to keep the money? What you going to do? So he's testing them and dealing with this loose end and examining the situation, that he neither accepted his brothers back immediately. He didn't embrace them then and said, Mishpacha, you know, great, good to have you, and embrace them and tell them who he was. And he didn't tell the soldiers to go get him. He didn't do either one. He collected information, find out what kind of people they are, and then he's going to make his decision later on. So then we should do the same thing. When we are confronted with loose ends, I guess God has not called us to be stupid. God has called us to depend upon Him. God has called us to be merciful and to be loving and to be kind, but not to be stupid. So He desires us to do the same sorts of things. The New Covenant is filled with commands to test the spirits, to examine carefully, to do all this. Then we should go into situations with our eyes open and say, well, okay, you claim this. Show me. Show me. You claim that you're different? Fine. Show me. And we know how this story worked out with Joseph. They tested his brothers and they came through. But the way in which they came through also indicated to him what kind of men they had become. And Scripture is silent about what had happened during most of those 20-some years back in Canaan. But something has happened to these brothers, because they're much different than what we saw when we left them. You know, things, the little vignettes we saw of life in Canaan was we had this the incident with Judah and his daughter-in-law, and we had it was a mess upon mess upon mess, and somehow God was still able to work in their lives that they got through it. Jacob needs some work though. Jacob has turned into a grouchy old man instead of just rejoicing in God, and that's not what God has called us to do either. But God's got to work through all these loose ends, that by the end of this, that the family is going to be reconciled. And the truth is going to have to come out. Because the brothers told the father that Joseph was dead. And the truth is going to come out, and that the family is going to have to deal with the truth and be healed. So I think the father was a little happier. I don't think he was too angry at the brothers when the golden chariots arrived, but that's next portion. That's next portion. So God desires us to proactively deal with loose ends and going to things with our eyes open. He desires us not to be bitter or upset or angry. Joseph was not bitter, but rather to joyfully accept the life he's given to us, to live it with enthusiasm, and to be of great service to him and to others all around us. Let's pray. Dearest God and Father, I thank you that by the blood of Yeshua, you have given us a far greater gift than rule over a kingdom. You have granted us a place at the table in your kingdom, the kingdom of our Messiah forever. That you have blessed us with the personal, intimate, one-on-one presence of your Spirit in our lives. That you have promised us never to leave us or forsake us. You give us the strength to live our lives in a way that's pleasing to you. And your joy is our strength every day. Open up our eyes that we might indeed serve you with all our hearts, that we may expunge the deadly secrets and loose ends that are poisoning our lives, that we might not have that baggage to drag around with us, but instead that we might serve you with a whole heart for the glory of our Messiah, Yeshua. Amen.